Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Yeah, okay. I've started the recording. Om Ajnanti Mirandasya Jnananjala Shilakaya Chakshurum Miritam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadhi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Okay, 928. Subha Subha Phale Evam Moksha Se Karma Bandhane Sanyasa Yoga Yuktatma Vimuktomam Upaishashi. In this way, you will be free from bondage to work and its auspicious and inauspicious results. With your mind fixed on me in this principle of renunciation, you will be liberated and come to me. One who acts in Krishna consciousness under superior direction is called Yukta. The technical term is Yukta Vairagya, further explained by Rupa Goswami as follows. Anasaktasya Vishayan Yatharam Upayunjata Nirbandha Krishna Sambandhe Yuktam Vairagyam Uchyate. This is Amrit Sindhu 1.2.255. Rupa Goswami says that as long as we are in the material world, we have to act. We cannot cease acting. Therefore, if actions are performed and the fruits are given to Krishna, then that is called Yukta Vairagya. Actually situated in renunciation, such activities clear the mirror of the mind, and as the actor gradually makes progress in spiritual realization, he becomes completely surrendered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, at the end, he becomes liberated, and this liberation is also specified. By this liberation, he does not become one with the Brahma Jyoti, but rather enters into the planet of the Supreme Lord. It is clearly mentioned here, Mam Upashyasi. He comes to me, back home, back to Godhead. There are five different stages of liberation, and here it is specified that the devotee who has always lived his lifetime under the direction of the Supreme Lord, as stated, has evolved to the point where he can, after quitting his body, go back to Godhead and engage directly in the association of the Supreme Lord. Anyone who has no interest but to dedicate his life to the service of the Lord is actually a sannyasi. Such a person always thinks of himself as an eternal servant because on the supreme will of the Lord, dependent on the supreme will of the Lord. As such, whatever he does it for the benefit of the world. Whatever action he performs it as service to the Lord. He does not give serious attention to the fruitive activities or prescribed duties mentioned in the Vedas. For ordinary person, it is obligatory to execute the prescribed duties mentioned in the Vedas. But although a pure devotee who is completely engaged in the service of Lord may sometimes appear to go against the prescribed Vedic duties, actually it is not so. It is said, therefore, by Vaishnava authorities that even the most intelligent person cannot understand the plans and activities of a pure devotee. The exact words are Tandra Vakya Kriya Mudra Tandra Vakya Kriya Mudra Vigrena Bhujaye Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila 23.39. A person who is always engaged in the service of Lord or is always thinking and planning how to serve the Lord is to be considered completely liberated at present, and in the future his going back home, back to Godhead, is also guaranteed. He is above all materialistic criticism, just as Krishna is above all criticism. Yeah, so this is a very nice purport, interesting detailed purport, and there are, you know, couple of comments that I have about this purport. But here, in the last paragraph, Prabhupada is actually quoting one verse from the Bhakti Samrit Sindhu. So which is that verse? Can someone recollect? Okay, I think most of the devotees, they have not read Nectar of Devotion, except Ujwala Mataji, I believe she has probably read. And obviously we had also discussed in the class. So can you find out or can you share what is the verse?
So we are talking about last paragraph?
Last paragraph, yeah.
No, bro. My brain is not working, no.
Can you remember any particular line from that verse or?
Yes, Prabhu.
Can you remember any particular line or any particular word from that original verse which is given in Bhakta Samrita Sindhu?
Prabhuji, sorry Prabhuji, 1 second. My phone, it's getting this thing. In between, I'm unable to hear. 1 minute.
Yeah. So I'm asking, are you able to recollect at least one line or one word from that verse, or at least the translation of that verse?
Is this like the pure devotional service, Sanya Bilashita Sunyam?
Mm. No, that is not given in the last paragraph.
Yeah.
Who else has joined till now? Aritra, are you there? Okay. So this is also a very important verse which is asked in the Bhakti Shastri exam. So one verse Prabhupada has already stated in the first paragraph, Anasaktasya Vishayan, which is also a very important verse. And then in the last paragraph also, there is a verse in the Bhakti Samrita Sindhu. So Prabhupada is quoting, he is basically just giving the translation of that verse. Okay. Ye yasya harirdasya karmana manasa gira nikhilasva api avastusav jivan muktusav uchyate. Now can you recollect?
I did not by heart this sloka, Prabhuji. I never tried to remember this.
So this is also one of the most important and popular verses from the Bhakti Samrita Sindhu.
What is the starting line, Prabhuji? I'll note it down.
Yasya Harir Dasya Karmana Manasa Gira Nikhilasva Apya Vastusu Jivan Mukti Savuchyate.
Okay, Prabhuji.
So person acting in Krishna consciousness with his body, mind, intelligence and words is a liberated person even within this material world, although he may be engaged in so many so-called materialistic activities. Okay, so that is the translation of this verse from Bhakti Samrita Sindhu, and Prabhupada also says the same thing. A person who is thus always engaged in the service of Lord or is always thinking and planning how to serve the Lord is to be considered completely liberated at present. So one can get liberated by engaging everything in the service of Lord, body, mind, intelligence, senses, everything. And that's how it is said that the body gets spiritualized. Because currently the body is material, but it can get spiritualized. So at the state of bhava, the body is completely spiritualized. And the soul gets completely rid of the ahankar and the ego. Okay. So this Yukta Vairagya is something, it's a concept that is actually promoted by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to Rupa Goswami, and he is explaining that everything belongs to Krishna, so there is nothing to be renounced. What can you renounce? Because nothing belongs to you. So whatever is there in the material world, it is supposed to be engaged in the service of the Lord. So you should not renounce anything. Only thing that we possess, what do we possess? What is the only thing that we possess?
Prabhuji,
can
I say?
Yeah.
I believe the only thing we possess is our free will, Prabhuji.
We possess free will, but we don't renounce free will. And so what is the meaning of possessing free will? What is the cause or the source of that free will.
That only
what,
thing
what
with
are
consciousness
you supposed
is we can say.
Huh?
The only thing we possess is we can say like this body what we got from this material nature. I mean.
No, that also we don't possess. We don't possess. Haribol Prabhu, yeah.
Sorry,
long time. How are you?
I'm fine.
Okay.
Or,
so how was your journey back to India?
You already started. A journey to India and back. Oh, it was very nice. I didn't want to come back actually. Because there is
okay.
So much personalism at its best over there. I was able to understand what we mean by personalism and impersonalism when you go over there and then come back here.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, it was very nice.
Yeah.
And thank you, that Mayapur trip was very, ekdam perfect, very seamless. And
good, wonderful.
Prabhuji was, yeah, he was with us. He took us around and then, he's also very, very nice devotee. So, his association was also very blissful. We were very happy. And he actually, so one thing was there, you know, my father is very critical, but my father did go. He was able to understand his mood. So he vigorously preached to my parents. Throughout,
okay.
We were on the bus. We were coming back. Oh, there, Shikhanda, you've been to Shikhanda? Where,
I don't think.
Okay, may not be. Okay, so he took us there, and when we were coming back, about 1.5-2 hours, constant preaching. And we'll be Bengali, man, because he's Bengali, so.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, we'll definitely talk, you know, about it.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
Like, we have already started the class, so in the middle
of
asking questions. Yeah.
Oh, sorry. I was thinking you said you joined, so I thought maybe you're just beginning. Okay. No, fine. Sorry for interrupting.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, so I was asking that what is the only thing that we possess? So we know that we don't possess anything. We don't possess the material world. We don't possess the material body. We don't possess the material things around us. So what do we possess? Because actually, material body is also given to us. So we don't possess it. And we are not, although Krishna is allowing us to use it, and we have limited control over our free will, because, you know, that is free will, although we have free will, but that will is also limited. It is not independent, it is not like unlimited like Krishna's free will, right? So, Krishna has given us the body, and we have some free will over it, some control over the body, but At the same time, we are, you know, body also controlled by karma, and it is also controlled by external circumstance. So we don't actually possess the body, you know, like completely. Okay. So what do we possess?
Hey, Krishna Prabhuji.
Yeah.
Prabhuji, we possess the spirit soul, and we also have the ego.
Yes, exactly. So the soul. Actually, it has a pure ego instead of a false ego. So when we talk about renunciation, we talk about the renunciation of the false ego, not the pure ego, because pure ego is always going to be there. A pure ego means that's our identification, that's our identity. So that is not going to be destroyed. We are not going to merge in Brahman, and we are all going to exist even after leaving the material body. So the pure ego is meant to serve the Lord, and that is always going to be there. And that's the only thing that we can renounce is the false ego. The, you know, when the pure ego is covered by Maya, then it becomes false ego. So at that particular time, you know, we also acquire the subtle body and the gross body, and then we rotate in the material world. Okay. So Yukta Vairagya principle is that you don't possess anything. So what are you going to renounce? So you only possess your ego, and if you renounce that ego, then you are in your natural constitutional position. of servant of Krishna, like that. So everything has to be used in the service of Lord, and everything becomes spiritualized by that. Okay, so that is the principle of Yukta Vairagya. And this is especially, see, now obviously depending on the need, time, circumstances, there are devotees who use everything in the service of Lord, especially the Goshtanandis. So they will generally engage everything in the service of Lord because they are preaching. And if you talk about the Bhajnanandis, then generally they are detached and renounced. So they are generally not dealing with the material world so much, because their main service is to chant the holy name of the Lord 24 hours a day. So this is the service of Bhajnanandi. And so a Bhajnanandi, but obviously a Bhajnanandi is aware that the material world is for the service of Lord. It's just that they don't deal with the material world because they are completely absorbed in chanting the holy name and in meditation. Okay. So the Goshtanandis are the one who are actually going to use everything in the service of Lord. Plus, at the same time, it is also very practical to say and to implement this principle, because especially for Grihasthas, it is the most practical way to advance in Krishna consciousness. Because most of the Grihasthas, you know, they are unable to give so much time to their sadhana. And they are kind of connected to the material world. They are also attached to the material world. So in order to purify themselves, they have to engage that in the service of Lord, and that is the best way, because artificially they cannot cultivate detachment so easily and quickly. So it takes a lot of time. Now what happens, you know, when we engage our hard work, our money in the service of Lord, then it gets purified. The work is purified, we don't get karma, we don't accrue karma from that, and we can also connect everything in relation with the Lord. So it is very easy and practical for us, you know. But even obviously, you know, Prabhupada also used everything in the service of Lord. Like he generally it is mentioned in the Shastra that a sannyasi is not supposed to cross the sea. But Prabhupada not only crossed the sea, but he also traveled in a ship, and he also traveled in the aircraft so many times. So and he also used technology. He did not deny it, you know, because he knew that it's artificial to renounce things, because ultimately the material elements, it is very easy to understand this concept that the material elements, they are coming from Krishna. The intelligence, the ability in the man is also coming from Krishna, as in the, you know, stated in the Bhagavad Gita. Now, one might think that, you know, the scientists are creating, they are inventing, and that's how we are able to use the technology. But who is giving the intelligence to the scientists? How are they able to think? How are they able to do research in their field? And then, even if they are able to think, but then if there are no material elements which are present, then what are they going to do with that intelligence? They can't do anything with that. So the Lord is providing all the material elements. He is providing air, water, fire, ether, you know, whatever is required. And then he is also giving intelligence to all these people who can do some research and come up with latest technologies, and so that people can live a comfortable life. Obviously, wherever and whenever we are upgraded with the latest technology, it also means that we have to pay more for that. So the value is always there, right? But if you think, when the Lord is providing everything, then He is not even charging anything. Now, normally, even if you need oxygen, when you go to hospital, they have the cylinder, oxygen cylinder. If you purchase it, they might have some price for the, for example, so many rupees for a gallon or like that. And so if you calculate how much amount of air you are breathing in a day, then you will realize that actually you are consuming or you are paying huge amount of money for that, but we are getting it for free, because the Lord is providing everything for free. And that's the reason we have to reconnect everything with the Lord, so that we don't become thieves. So we have to be grateful, and we have to connect everything with the Lord. So now when we are breathing, when we are taking something from the nature, and if we are always engaged in Krishna's service, then automatically everything is connected to Krishna. But if we use the life material body for sense gratification, then we are in death, and you know we have to somehow we have to clear the death. Otherwise, you know, we'll have some obligation. And even though we take many things for free from the material world or from the nature, but everything has a price. So even though we might feel that, you know, we don't have to pay anything, but ultimately, you know, there is a law of karma which is waiting for us, and everything is accounted for. So the idea is that, you know, we cannot escape from the material world. In fact, we want to engage everything in service of Lord. And that is the best and most practical way to advance in spiritual life. So, and another thing is that even if a devotee would, you know, try to get detached from the material world, or they will probably escape, try to escape from the material world, but the problem is they won't be able to escape completely because of their attachment to the material world. So in the beginning, we might think because of over enthusiasm, because of influence of other devotees, that let us also, you know, become brahmacharis, sannyasis, and engage full time in the service of Lord. But then over a period of time, we might probably think that, okay, well, we are still attached to the material world. So this is not something that we are supposed to do. And that is the reason there is a concept, another concept, which is called as Markat Vairagya, or renunciation of the monkeys. So Rupa Goswami, he actually did not recommend this kind of mentality. He was, you know, he definitely condemned this kind of mentality. Because of this particular mentality people have, they generally want to escape from the material world. Or in other words, they want peace. So like, you know, as devotees also, mostly we want peace. We don't want to take any anxiety, or we don't want to take any responsibility, because already we are taking responsibility in the material world. So to take another responsibility in the spiritual realm becomes a big challenge for us. So generally, because we are frustrated with the material world, dealing with the material world, then, you know, we are looking for peace. So then we come to Krishna consciousness. And then after coming to Krishna consciousness, after some time we realize that, well, here also we are supposed to take some responsibility. So then, you know, we get really kind of pissed off because of that, you know, that the only reason, you know, we came to spiritual life is because we wanted to experience happiness, and we want to get rid of anxiety. But now, you know, when we go further, then we realize that actually we are not supposed to escape. So same thing Arjuna was also trying to do, but then obviously Krishna convinced him that he has to fight the war, and then he should continue. So so in order to condemn this kind of mentality of market renunciation, because obviously we are not qualified for that, or we are just trying to imitate the great personalities, and imitation is a completely different thing. You know, to imitate something and to follow it, these are two different things. So in order to benefit us, so that we stay connected with the material world, because we are attached to it, you know, Rupa Goswami has also given a very simple way to connect everything in connection with the Lord, and that is to stay where you are at and engage everything in service of Lord. So any devotee, they have any comment about this? Any question? Now, the obvious question is that it is mentioned that we have to engage everything in service of Lord, and at the same time, we should not expect the results. So this is something, and at the same time, it is also mentioned that a Krishna conscious devotee should be always in a leading position, or they should do the best in their field, in their area. They should be the best in their area, right? So how do we balance these things? It,
Is there a question to ask somebody?
Huh?
Is there a question that you're proposing to?
Yeah, the question, yeah, that's the question that, you know, it is mentioned that we are supposed to be the best in our area as a devotee, because if we perform best in our area, then others will follow. Okay. And at the same time, if you want to be the best in your field, then you have to work more. You have to work hard. Probably you have to work more harder than others. Okay. And probably you have to also compete with them. So then, and obviously when you compete with others and when you want to achieve something, then obviously you are attached to the results. So, but the Bhagavad Gita says that we should not be attached to the results. Krishna says that just do your karma and then depend on me for the fruits. So how do we balance these things? Now, can we say one thing that, let's say for example, you know, there are devotees in our movement like Ambarish Prabhu, who is the, you know, the empire of Ford is being run by him, and, you know, he's like obviously a great leader in society. So he's like a very popular figure in society. So can we say that whoever is doing business, they should all be like him? Because we have to be the best in our area. So is it like that?
Actually, probably to be the best in your field, our concentration and passion should be towards the job that is at hand. And if we do with complete 100% absorption in complete involvement in whatever we are doing, then we are not really bothered about the result. Result is a consequence of our action. If we are going to think about the result, then how will we perform? So where will we engage our mind? To be the best, we have to engage our mind in the job at hand, I think. So that is the only way we can be best at whatever we are doing. And automatically, okay, if you are giving 100% to a job, it's going to be the best done job, right? And if there are imperfections, obviously the process of doing itself gives us a lot of education about what we are doing and how we need to improve. And so only if we are 100% absorbed will we be able to take that kind of feedback from whatever we are doing, and then constantly we'll improve.
Okay. Yeah, but I think the biggest challenge is that you have to compete with others in order to become the best. So that is, you know, that basically would mean that you have to work for extras, and you have to use your intelligence and everything, your talent, everything, and you have to set a target for yourself. So if you want to achieve certain goal, then obviously, see, you have to have a goal. Otherwise, you cannot achieve that target. So if you just take it for granted, then things will not work automatically. Okay. So that is a challenge. How to be detached from the results. At the same time, the results or the goal is something necessary for us to keep us motivated and to also lead others, right? So what is the solution for this?
Prabhuji, one time we heard like Nanda Samara saying about the students performing the best in the colleges, I mean their studies. They should think that it is their studies, whatever hard work they are doing, it's an offering to Lord.
Yeah, that is, yeah, we don't, obviously, you know, that is a basic theme of what we are discussing, that we have to, everything is an offering to the Lord only. Like ultimately, see, if it's not an offering to the Lord, then what is the point of, you know, then it's not even Krishna conscious basically. So, So that is the basic thing. But then how to be the best in our field, in our area? Like, see, the challenge is that if someone is a businessman or someone who is doing a job, now everyone has got, not everyone can become like Amrish Prabhu or, multimillionaire guy. One cannot overnight turn out to be a multimillionaire, even if that person is a devotee, because, we cannot expect that the Lord will, arrange and, everything for us. We just have to do our sadhana and then just work the best. Or in other words, give our, whatever, like 10 hours or 12 hours of job or work, and then Krishna will make us multi-billionaires in a couple of years. That will never happen. Okay. So, any other devotees would like to guess?
No, Prabhuji, just try to be myself clear. Are we talking about how we can renounce our results of the hard work?
Renounce the result of hard work that is given in the Bhagavad Gita. That's what the Lord is saying. Okay, but at the same time, it is also mentioned by our acharyas that we have to be the best in whatever we do. And then if you want to be the best, then obviously we have to set some target also. And because you have to compete, with people in the material world. So then how do we become the best in the material world and at the same time also be detached from the results?
In that case, Prabhuji, how can we define the best?
How can we define?
The best.
The best, yeah. Yeah, so it is, yeah. That is a good, it's a good thinking. And you are going in the right direction. So how do we define best for everyone? So obviously, this best for everyone is going to be subjective. It cannot be, like if I give example of Amrish Prabhu, then Amrish Prabhu can probably give example of Bill Gates or Ambani. So now, if he wants to become like an Ambani, then obviously he has to work so much harder to come to that level and to be the best in his area. So basically, best can mean that you are at the top, top five or top, you are first basically amongst all others. Or best can also mean overall you can be the best. Whatever you are doing, you can be the best overall. So, this question was asked long time back by one of my godbrothers to Radhanath Maharaj. And he gave a very logical and very convincing answer. And it also is very encouraging for all devotees because not everyone is, a multi-billionaire and not everyone is having a business. Some devotees, they also work and, the work schedule is kind of fixed for them. So, and then obviously because of other practicalities, difficulties, no help, no investment. It's difficult to actually see how much can a single person do. A single person cannot do anything. Now, those who have a lot of wealth, naturally they will employ people and then they will assign the task to them. So that's how, the company will expand. You cannot expand the company single-handedly. You can bring the company to a certain level, but then after that, you require a lot of vision, how you want to take your company in the future, where you want to see your company. Okay, and once you have that vision, then obviously you have to plan according to that vision and then you have to employ a lot of people. So, and obviously when you talk about employing people, then obviously you should have money. If you don't have money, then obviously they will not sustain for a long time. And the company will finally close. So then, obviously, you know, this concept of gradually expanding the business and, you know, hiring employees and then, you know, again expanding. So that is a very practical concept. But the point is that if we talk about the best in our area, then it's not necessary that each and every devotee is the same. So now some devotees, they are completely satisfied in their work, which they are doing in their, you know, whether they are doing a job or whether they are doing some research or whether they are doing some kind, you know, they are in some line, in the line of artist or, you know, so many other lines are there, doctor, engineer. Everyone has their own inclination and everyone is satisfied with their own work, you know. So we are supposed to select a work which makes us really happy. And, you know, by doing that, we become satisfied. So that is the first principle. The starting point is that we have to select the work that will satisfy us and make us happy. Now, when you do that work and when you do it with your full efforts, and obviously now it's a circumstantial thing that, you know, if you don't have any support, background support, or you don't have any investment, you know, then obviously whatever you can do to the best of your ability, you can do that much. But beyond that, you require a lot of help. And if you cannot get that help, then you are doing the best in your area. So Maharaj was actually answering this question in a way that every devotee is a different devotee and their circumstances are different. So he was saying that for devotees who want to do, who are, we have to see one thing. Let's say if we have a lot of wealth and we also contribute a lot to the Lord. Now, there might be wealthy people or wealthy devotees, but they might be very, you know, miser in their contribution to the Lord. So obviously, if you go on increasing your work and you don't contribute so much, then what is the use of expanding your work? You are unnecessarily bothering yourself with anxiety. So what you are basically doing is you are increasing your comfort area and the facilities. So with time, you know, we are just increasing our material standard, but we are not contributing anything to the Lord. Now, on the other hand, if there is a wealthy devotee, but he's donating also at the same time, he's increasing his donation contribution, then it makes sense for him, you know, to expand his business and to engage that. So it is, you know, it is like, let's say, for example, if a wealthy person is very happy and satisfied with his business and he would like to engage that business in the service of Lord. So for that devotee to expand his business and to engage that business in Krishna consciousness, that is the best thing for him to do. And then, so that is a major service that he is rendering through his income. And so then he can put extra efforts.
After call, hold par hai. Line par bane rahein ya kuch der baad koshish karein. Your call is on hold. Please stay online or call back later.
Hello. Hello, Krishna.
Yeah. So for that particular devotee, it is best for him to continue his service or continue his, you know, expand his business to get more wealth so that, you know, he can engage more in the service of Lord. So for such devotees, it is best that they compete with others and, you know, they work for extra hours and, you know, they become the best in their area. They lead others, you know, so like that. But for devotees who are not wealthy, you know, who are like moderate, middle class background and all. So, you know, for them, I think it is best, you know, if they, now obviously it's a personal choice, whether a devotee would like to, if they are really passionate about increasing their business, expanding it, then it's their choice. But generally, you know, those who are satisfied with whatever they are earning, and obviously they are earning quite well. It is not that, you know, they are, you know, there is something which is lacking. So they are quite satisfied in that. And so it is better for them that they contribute certain percentage and at the same time they focus on their sadhana also properly. So every devotee has some talent and that talent they have to engage in the service of Lord. Now, for some devotees who are talented with certain kind of physical service, then obviously it is best for them to engage in that kind of service. So, you know, so basically when we say that we have to be best in our, you know, area, it basically means that every devotee, whoever has got some talent in a particular field, they should engage that talent in the service of Lord in the best possible way. And that's how they will be forever happy and satisfied. And they will like to take responsibilities and challenges in that. But if you don't like to do certain things, and if you are asked to take more responsibility, then obviously you want to go away from that. Okay. So, so one, every devotee should recognize their talents, their services, you know, that which particular services they would like to render on a long-term basis. What is the talent that they have? You know, they all, everyone has certain skill, and we have to recognize that, and then accordingly we have to engage that. So Maharaj was mentioning this point that a devotee who is doing, you know, a good sadhana, or you know, if they are doing good sadhana or they are doing more sadhana, and at the same time they are also working, but they are kind of satisfied with their work, so they can do, they can actually do more sadhana and they can do more service in terms of you know, rendering physical services along with monetary contribution also. Okay, and those who are really wealthy, very wealthy, and those who are really interested, and these, you know, these devotees who are very interested in contributing to the temple, then they should expand their business because that is their main service area. Okay, so different devotees, there are different talents, and they have to engage those in the service of Lord. Then they will always be happy. And when they do this, so it obviously, it does not mean, so we try our best, but then the result, we obviously have a target also. We set targets also. Like, you know, for example, when we are distributing books, so we have all set targets for ourselves. And that is what we are being taught, that every devotee, you know, if they can take, if they can actually take some target for themselves, then obviously it will boost the sales of the books, right? So every temple, you know, they have set some target, and generally the target is more than the previous year. So whatever they do in the previous year, they would like to do more the next year, the following year, right? So that's how a target has to be there. But now, and then we have to try our best to achieve the target. But whether we get to the target or not, that is something, you know, we have to cultivate detachment. So that is something that is not in our control. And I think that is something that we have to accept, you know, and realize that ultimately it is Krishna's will. You know, whatever we would like to achieve, we have to put up. Like for example, it's a very simple concept. So let's say, you know, if my target is 300 Bhagavatam sets this year, okay, so I want to put my best efforts, so, you know, so that I can achieve that target. And let's say if I did not set the target of 300 sets, I will probably assume that, okay, you know, things will happen randomly, or, you know, the Lord will help. Okay, so and then what will happen? I will not put my best effort for that, or I will think that, okay, things will happen automatically after some time. So then obviously what will happen is we are not giving our best. So when we have a target, then obviously we know that this is the time span and we have to achieve a certain target in this particular period. So we give our best. But internally, you know, we should know that, okay, ultimately whatever the Lord wants will happen. So similarly, devotees who are wealthy, they would like to engage their money in Krishna consciousness. And I think for these devotees whose major service is contribution, then obviously they have to, at least they should donate 30%, 35% of their income. Otherwise, to say that, you know, they donate 10% of the income, 15%, it sounds very, you know, cheap. You know, it's not fair actually. So obviously, then obviously they want to just increase their material standards. So we have to make sure that whatever we do, we should like that, and then we should engage and connect that with the Lord. Okay, so that's how we become best in the in our area. Because what will happen naturally, when others will see that we are always happy in what we are doing. Generally, people are miserable. You know, even if they are working very hard in the material world, even if they are very wealthy. But you see, most of these billionaires, they are all miserable people. They are always in anxiety and they are very frustrated. Inside their heart, they are always hankering for some kind of love, some kind of shelter. But externally, they are showing so much proud and all. Okay, so it's very shallow. You know, they are actually very shallow people. They don't have much happiness in their heart. Externally, they are just showing it. Okay, so when other people will see, so now even if you are not not someone like a billionaire like Ambani, but when people see that you are happy and happily, very much happily engaged in your service, and at the same time when they see that you are doing your work, at the same time you are also contributing selflessly for something, then they will definitely be inspired by your example. So even though you might not be like super rich person, but still people will appreciate and they will respect. Okay, so does this make sense? Any comment or question on this? Hare Krishna.
Clear, Prabhuji.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Rajiv Prabhu?
Yes, Prabhuji.
Yeah, so see, something very interesting. I think all of you must be knowing a lot of motivational speakers. So some of them, to name a few, are like, Jai Shetty, then Gaur Gopal Prabhu, and then Dr. Vivek Bindra. And now these are our devotees, our own devotees. But then there are others also who are motivational speakers. You see, the common theme and background for all motivational speaker is spiritual principles. Each of them, they are focusing. Now, recent, just like few days ago, I was hearing someone had shared, Sadhguru's video. So someone had interviewed him about the subject of relationships in marriage, between the spouse, the relationships. So basically the topic was that, astrology can actually predict, or it can give a good consultation about the compatibility between the partners. So, should each and every person go to the, before marriage, should they go to the astrologer and consult and get a guidance? So Sadhguru answered, and that answer was actually nothing, no different from the Shastras. It is basically coming from, everything is coming from Krishna. Whatever the motivational speakers are speaking, it's all coming from Krishna. Okay, and I will also tell you why it is like that. So now the Sadhguru said that, you might get married because of external reasons, but ultimately you have to become responsible to sustain and continue the marriage. So you have to adjust according to the others, you cannot expect that they will change for you. And, so it's vice versa basically for the partners. And you have to work it out. It is not, even if the astrologer, he will consult you certain things, but ultimately you both have to work it out. And you cannot expect from a partner. You have to provide selfless love. So now this is a basic principle which everyone knows. See, the more you expect from a person, the more you'll get frustrated. That's a nature's law. So this is how the material world is designed. And that is the reason. Now, see, if someone says that we are not spiritual, but, still we using our intelligence, using our experience, we tell people, we guide people. We don't take reference of any Shastra. We don't consult any spiritual leader. But whatever we have experienced, whatever we hear, whatever we see from that, we say. But now, to say that we should not expect from others. So who has created that kind of law in the material world? Like, when you expect certain things, you become miserable. That is law of nature. When you become angry, you lose control of yourself, and then you can do certain things. See, most of the people, they are looking for two things. how to get rid of anger. Like, you know, when I see most of the motivational talks that generally people focus on, the topic is about how to get rid of anger, how to control our anger, and how to become free from anxiety. These two topics are the most common amongst each and every person. So now it's obvious that when you become angry, then you lose control of yourself and then things can worsen. Okay. So now why it is like that? Why when I get angry, things should improve, but it is not improving. It is making things worse. So why it is like that? When I expect from people, things becomes worse. Why it is like that? So every, you know, whatever you can think of, you know, whatever anarthas that you have, lust, envy, anger, greed. Now, why all these people want to get rid of all these things? You know, they are addicted to it, but they want to get rid of it because they know that that is the cause of problems. So the simple question is that why these things bring misery and problem? So it definitely means that someone is controlling and someone has designed the world in such a way that we are receiving. See, because let's say there is no God and everything is random, then if there is randomness, you know, obviously it means that maybe, okay, let's say 50% of the time we get a negative reaction because of our lust, anger, envy, greed, pride. But then other 50% of time, why don't we get a positive response? If things are happening randomly, because, you know, then we can say that, okay, you know, there is no law in the material world. It just happens randomly. Everything is happening randomly. But there are certain things that are simply fixed, like law of gravity. So all these principles are also fixed. So any motivational speaker, if you go, they will also, they are all, you know, taking solutions from the Bhagavad Gita. They are all taking solutions from Shastra. They might say, they might deny, but ultimately this is the thing. Because the scriptures, right from the beginning of time, they are dealing with these subject matters. And they don't just deal with these emotions, but they also deal with how to get free from the material world, because it's a place of suffering. And everyone knows that. Right? Yeah, so I don't know why I was discussing this. I forgot. I forgot why I was saying all these things. In the beginning,
motivation.
Yeah, I just lost. What?
Whoever gives this, like some motivational speakers, whatever they speak, it is based, the base is Bhagavad Gita.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I made that point to, in order to explain certain things, you know, which was connected to our discussion about using our talents in Krishna's service.
The previous one was how best we can do our work so that we can achieve our targets at the same time. We are not born by the results, like something like that. Then
we were
telling that we have to use our talents in the service of the Lord. I mean, in the service of the Lord. Then it came from that.
Yeah. I do remember that, you know, after finishing that discussion, I asked devotees if they have any questions. And then afterwards I started saying that, but I don't recollect why I was saying this. So I was talking about our devotee motivational speakers, and then that was the beginning point why I said. Anyways, probably maybe it is connected to being happy in whatever we are doing. Or yeah, probably it was connected to the wealthy people who are not actually, yeah, so they are very shallow in their happiness. and they are always seeking outside. Okay. Yeah, so that was the connection. And that's the reason, you know, most of them, I wanted to impress this point that most of these so-called billionaires, they go to the motivational speakers and, you know, they would like to get some guidance and training. Because right from the beginning, you know, the entire process in material world is to focus on how to attain money. No one is focusing on building character and, you know, being satisfied and happy in life. That is not the actually, you know, that's not the priority. And our main objective is to be happy and satisfied in whatever we are doing. So when we do that, then naturally, see, this thing also will influence our sadhana. Because when you are not happy in your work, naturally it will affect your sadhana. And so I know, you know, I know my friends, you know, and some other devotees who are kind of not so satisfied with their work, and because of that, they are unable to do their sadhana properly. And they are very disturbed because, see, you know, what they are doing is maximum time of their life they are spending in their work. So you can say they are spending maximum part of their life in doing something that they don't like to do. And obviously that will create a lot of unnecessary anxiety and pressure. So if you remove that thing, if you somehow replace that with something which is, you know, you really like and you're inclined to do in the majority of your life, then naturally it will inspire other people also. But even if you are working so much, you earn money also, but if you are not happy and satisfied, then that will not create a proper impression. So you see, all these, one day I was actually seeing this video of Jai Shetty Prabhu, Jai Ghanshyam Das, and he was also, you know, in that video, he was mentioning this point very clearly that most of the people, you know, it's a survey done in entire world, that most of the people, they're spending their hours for something that they don't like to do. And that's the reason they are miserable and suffering. And so he was also recommending this point that one should actually do something that they like to do. Because in the long run, in the long term, it will be a very successful thing. So even though it might not have much money and wealth, but one should do what they like to do. So that is the concept. Otherwise, what will happen, you'll not be able to do justice to both things. If you are in the middle, then we'll not be able to do or give our best. So we might just do as a matter of duty or responsibility, that's it. But we'll not be so much enthused to do it. See, that's the reason even Jai Shetty, you know, he was a monk earlier, if you know this. He was a monk earlier. And he spent a lot of time in the ashram, as a, you know, brahmachari in the ashram. And so he does mention a lot of times that this was the most crucial period of his time when he was in the brahmachari ashram. And he learned the best lessons of his life during this period. And then finally, instead of going for a job or some kind of profession, you know, he wanted to do something which he liked to do. So he finally ended up becoming a motivational speaker. But obviously now he's, you see, you know, his video is liked by millions of people. Each and every video is liked by so many millions of people throughout the world. So that's how we want to do, basically. You know, that should be the goal. Now, if some devotees, they are doing certain things which they don't like to do it, obviously, you know, because there's responsibility, you know, obviously they have to continue. They cannot stop and all, like, completely change their field, for, you know, like, because there are certain practical things to be taken care of. So one cannot do it immediately. But in the long term, one should have that goal, that they should target for that. You know, whatever they would like to achieve, they should do it. Otherwise, you know, most of the time in our material world, we'll be doing something that we don't like to do and we'll always repent about it. And then we'll not be able to set up best examples. for others. Okay, so it is not about the quantity for a devotee, but it is about actually to always be happy and satisfied in whatever they do. And when they are happy and satisfied, then another thing also happens. It's not so difficult to be attached to the results of the activity. Okay, but if you are not happy with what you are doing, then obviously there is an expectation that I have worked so hard, so I should get the result also. And that will discourage more if the result does not come. So does this make sense to everyone? Anyone has any...
What you're saying is that if we really love what we are doing, then even if the result is not that fantastic, we are still happy because at least we did what we loved.
Yes. Yeah, that is the key. That is the key. So, it's not exactly what you are saying that, you know, if you are loving our work, but it is love comes first, it will come. So whatever we love, that will be our major focus in our life. And naturally, because of that, we'll be happy and satisfied always.
Okay. But the main thing from the Bhagavad Gita point of view is that you should do what you love, but it has to be Krishna conscious, right?
Yeah. See, in any case, whether you love or don't love, because we have been put in a circumstance and situation because obviously we have come into Krishna consciousness after a long time. Like some of us have come after a long time. So naturally, we are kind of like some devotees, they are already married, they have responsibilities. So they are already kind of set in their material life. So they are not expected to change it altogether suddenly. So obviously they will have to continue that work, you know, if they like it or not. But, but obviously they should have a target, you know, in the future that, because after coming to Krishna consciousness, now let's say for example, see if some devotee is not unable, they are more attached to their work. They are more attached to their comforts. So they are more attached to their work probably and they cannot do full-time bhakti. So for them, it is good, you know, if they continue their work and then give good amount of percentage. And then, it is as good as doing full-time seva because their main thing is, is service in the form of Lakshmi, like that. So there will be, there are rare devotees or there are very few devotees who can actually stay in the temple full-time and they can, be like a, follow the standard of a proper standard of a temple devotee like that, like for example, following the authority in the temple and then attending the morning program and then preaching and all that. So it is not meant for everyone. So different devotees, they will engage differently in their work. So those who are already, they have crossed certain period of age or limit, and they are not, obviously they are unable to do certain things, then obviously they have to recognize their talents and in the long run they have to somehow bring it out. They have to share with others. So through that talent, one has to contribute. So there are two possibilities for a Grihastha devotee. Like Prabhupada expected, and he was generally of the opinion that the Grihastha devotees, after 50 years of it, they should like kind of come to the state of Vanaprastha. So basically, Prabhupada was encouraging all the devotees to become full-time devotees, at least after 50 years. So now, the Grihastha devotees, they have this option that, whether they would like to engage full-time in the service of the Lord or they would like to continue their work and at the same time support the temple. So this is how, it has to be done. So not everyone is actually able to withstand the temple life. So it is, kind of austere and at the same time, it's not so simple. Because see, in Grihastha Ashram, we have independence. We are our own boss. There is no one to tell us anything. So we are talking about Grihastha Ashram. We are not talking about work or anything. Like obviously, a devotee who has business, they are their own boss. But devotee who is working, they have their authority also. But in general, in Grihastashram, there is some kind of independence with all the devotees. Like, you know, for example, they can socialize, you know, they would like to go, they would like to do certain things. So these are all there. But when you join a temple, obviously, you know, you are kind of obligated to the temple, because, you know, they are providing you, you know, they are providing you facilities to stay and prasadam. So you have to serve. Also, you have to get proper results for the temple. You have to get results which are more than, you know, what they are paying for your staying and prasadam. So all these things are there. So now different devotees according to the different. But generally, Prabhupada expected that. He did expect that, you know, devotees would finally come to this point where, because what happens is, in the material world, the more we work, the more we get connected to the material energy, and there is a lot of chance of getting distracted from sadhana, from seva like that. Okay. But those devotees who are kind of fixed in their sadhana, and you know, and if they realize that this is their main service and that's the reason they are doing it, then it's, you know, as good as being a full-time devotee. But the contribution has to be there, obviously. So that's the point. So is this clear?
But then, okay, one thing, bro, about this point of doing what you like. But sometimes it happens that your seniors or guru may ask you to do something that you don't like to do, or something that you want to do, but they tell you that no. This is not the way you can serve us best. So you will have to try and do this, although it's very difficult. So they tell, the principle of surrender is very important. Whether you can do
okay.
or not. You understand what I'm saying?
Okay. So,
right?
So it's a good point. See, now first of all, generally a guru will engage the disciple according to their best capacity. So obviously, then, you know, it is very natural that the guru will ask the disciple what is your best talent and then engage them accordingly. So a good leader will always engage the disciple, you know, in what they like to do. So that is, then obviously, see, because obviously in Kali Yuga, and because we are conditioned souls, we cannot expect that, you know, we'll surrender like that immediately. Like, you know, for example, the guru will say, like, tomorrow if he says, Aritra, join full time, come with me, leave everything, you know, come with me and just join full time. So you obviously will not be able to do it, you know, because we are attached in the material world to a certain degree. So the guru or the leader, you know, they will see what is the main talent a devotee has, and they will engage accordingly. Now, a guru might say, he might probably not encourage the devotee to use their talents at this point of time, because maybe it's not the right time. That's the only, I think that's the only reason why you probably not advise the disciple to engage in their talents. You know, like for example, you know, you have responsibilities and you have work. So you cannot say that, well, I would like to give up my work and I would like to, you know, engage in my talents, cultivate my talents. But your talent should also generate income. If you have a family, then it should generate income. And if it does not generate income, then you have to do certain things that even if you don't like to do it. So maybe at certain point of time, it's not the right thing to do at some point of time. But maybe in the future, yeah, we want to attain that kind of status where, you know, we get that opportunity to, you know, get rid of our dislikings and engage what we like to do. Okay, so for that reason, maybe the guru might say that, okay, not right now, but yeah. But generally, a guru will always engage the disciple according to their natural inclinations. So those gurus who are unable to do that, you know, they will not be able to inspire them properly. Okay, so, yeah. So any other question? Any other devotee? And that is the reason, let's say for example, if a devotee is stuck in a situation where they are not liking their job, not liking their work, but they are doing it. So that's where sadhana plays an important role, plays a very important role. So for those devotees, sadhana can become a major instrument for happiness. So sadhana association with devotees, like, you know, that can give a lot of satisfaction and happiness. Okay, and then maybe after some time, the Lord might arrange, you know, the devotee will be able to do certain things that they like to do. So sadhana is very important. It's the most important principle. I would probably say that whether a devotee is wealthy and or whether a devotee is, you know, like not sufficiently wealthy or like poor or whatever, whoever it is, not a single devotee should compromise on the sadhana. Whatever they are doing, like at least, you know, the minimum thing is, minimum standard is chanting, reading, hearing. They should never compromise on these things. And this should be regular. So it's had to be done on an everyday basis. So even if a devotee is very wealthy and if he also, you know, contributing, let's say 40% to the temple, but if he does not have a good sadhana, then there are a lot of chances that, you know, with time, he will be distracted. Because being in contact with the material world for such a long time without proper sadhana will definitely be a obstacle. So each and every devotee, they should never compromise on the sadhana, irrespective of the service they are rendering, whether it is book distribution, Naam Sankirtan, or whatever it is. Okay, because the strength and also sadhana is like, you know, the petrol. Without the petrol, the car cannot run. So, you know, how many days you can run without petrol? 1 day, 2 days, 3 days. And finally, it will come to a halt. So similarly, a devotee, if they are not doing proper sadhana, then they will continue for a certain time. But then after that, they will stop. Their enthusiasm will go down and they will become complacent in their spiritual life. It's just because they are not reading and hearing. I would say that more than chanting, you know, a regularity on hearing and reading is actually more important. Because chanting, you know, I know devotees who are chanting, and probably they are chanting 16 rounds also, but they don't have so much taste for spiritual life. They are more inclined towards, you know, materialistic concepts, and they even don't know the, you know, proper tattva or the principles or the siddhants in spiritual life. And because of that, they actually really cannot perform proper devotional service because they are unaware of many things. So without reading and hearing, it does not make sense to chant the holy name. So I would say, you know, like if devotees, they, you know, they come to me and they ask me that, can I chant 16 rounds, you know, when they start the process, and when they are chanting 4 rounds, 6 rounds, and then they come up to me and they say that, well, can I start increasing my rounds? So I say, don't increase your rounds. Whatever you are chanting, you chant those many rounds. At the same time, whatever extra rounds you would like to chant, instead of that, you read and hear. So let's say they want to chant extra 2 or 4 rounds. So I suggest them, instead of that, do read for 15 minutes or half an hour every day, along with your 4 rounds that you are already chanting. Don't jump. That is my request to everyone. And because I know that the devotees who have jumped like that, they will also come down very quickly. After a few days, after a few weeks, they will come down back to 4 rounds. That is for sure. If they don't have a proper sadhana, regular hearing association, then they will come down to 4 rounds. So it is only because devotees, they hear constantly from other devotees. That's the reason they are able to maintain their sadhana with period of time. Otherwise, they will go down. In you know, my observation, 99% of the cases have been like that. maybe 1% probably extremely rare, but 99% have been like that. Whichever new devotees I have guided, because they don't hear and read regularly, the chanting is affected. And not only chanting, but they are not even studying anything. Even if they will hear or read, they will probably do it one day, 2 days, and then third day gone. So, you know, after a few days, they will start again. And then again, so that up and down thing will always going on. So it is always better to be steady in terms of, even it might be less quantity, but it is better to be steady. Because when you get habituated to steadiness, then in future, whatever you do, you'll always be steady. So let's say, obviously the goal is to increase the number of rounds. There is no doubt about that. We have to reach the level of 16 rounds at least minimum. So that has to be the goal. But the idea is that you, if you are trained right in the beginning to become steady, then for you to do 16 rounds and to also hear and read, that will also become very natural for you. And, you know, it will be very easy for you. So that's the thing that we have to focus on. Yeah. Rajiv Prabhu, you had something to say?
Yeah, so when you say we have to continue with the sadhana, it's more like an appeal that even if we are not enjoying it, we have to do it.
Right? Yes, yeah, we have to.
We have to do it. So that means many times we should do even things that we don't like, but slowly we have to try and develop a taste for it.
Yeah, see, that's the reason it is Vaidhi Bhakti, because we do not love the process spontaneously. So that's the reason it is regulative principles. So by following regulative principles, see, again, now the same thing is applied here. So why you have to do it even if you don't like to do it? But because when you do it, when you keep doing it, there will be a point of time where you will be able to maintain your sadhana in the future. So you keep doing it, even if you don't like to do it. And obviously, the taste will come. Now, see, there is another point is that, devotees, when we talk about sadhana, devotees generally they think that we are only speaking about chanting. But it is not only about chanting, you know, because the taste or what you are saying that, you know, even if you don't like to do it, we do it. But then, obviously, how long can we go like that? We don't want to do it mechanically. We want to do it naturally, lovingly, and spontaneously, right? So in order to come to that stage quickly, hearing and reading is essential. So if you, for example, let's say, if you don't hear only, and if you just chant the holy name, then how much effect it will have, you know, like probably you will get bored after some time. Because hearing is not there. You are not, like, we are not hearing about the glories of holy name, about the glories of the Lord, about the glories of the devotees, about the process of devotional service. We are not hearing about it. So naturally, it will be like you're firing a gun, but there is no bullet. It is just making voice. So it will be like that. You know, there is no bullet inside. But when you water it through the process of Shravanam, Kirtanam and, you know, association and Shravanam. So then what happens? You are adding constant fuel to the car. And when you keep adding constant fuel, then the car will never stop. It will get habituated to run. Okay, like that. So, yeah, so was that your question?
Yep, so that means... that's what I'm saying, that although earlier we were saying that we should do things that we are like, that we like, then we can do better. But here, at the same time, we are saying we should do sadhana, which means when we say we should do, even though we don't like, we should do. Otherwise, nobody will say we should do. Everybody will just do it. So initially, nobody likes to do, but then it is recommended we should not stop the sadhana. Never stop. So that means... It's something you have to go on doing and develop a taste. It's like classical music. Initially, nobody likes classical music, but when you hear again and again and again, then it grows on you. And when it grows on you, then there comes a time when normal music that you hear appears very shallow. And it is classical music which gives you more in-depth. It's more deeper than the conventional type of music. So something similar here also, I think.
Yeah. So that's the reason we proceed from Vaidhi to Raganuga. regulations, rule regulation to spontaneous devotional service. But you know, so there are certain things that will enhance the process. It will take the process quickly. Okay. Otherwise, it will take a long time to reach that point. So that is what we are stressing here. So that's the reason. See, that is the reason Prabhupada gave so many books to us. That is the reason we have Bhagavatam lectures in the temple every day. Prabhupada made a system. So Prabhupada has given 5 most essential principles in ISKCON, which are which is actually not something that he has created. It is something that Rupa Goswami has actually impressed upon in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So these 5 things Prabhupada has given very intelligently in ISKCON. So so what are these 5 things?
Deity worship, Bhagavatam reading, staying in the dance,
okay.
Chanting,
yeah.
In the association.
Correct, yeah. So chanting, association, then Bhagavatam, mm-hmm. And then deity worship, and then Dhamvas. So if you, when you go to ISKCON temple, you will find all these 5 things always there. Prabhupada has designed, you know, all these things based on these most essential 5 principles. So you have that, you know, chanting is obviously there. Then association is always going to be there in ISKCON centers. That's the purpose of going to temple. Then Bhagavatam is every day. Bhagavatam is given in the morning time. And then deity worship is done so elaborately in ISKCON. And the last is Dhamvas. Now Dhamvas, Prabhupada says, wherever the devotees, they get together, it becomes a holy place or Dham. So technically he has also given Dham. In fact, Dhamvas basically means you have to reside in a Dham in your mind. Because we can be in the Dham, but we can be outside also. Like for example, you know, when we go to Dham, but our mind is somewhere else. So then we are actually not in the Dham because we are more connected to the material world outside. And at the same time, even if we are outside the Dham, but if we are absorbed in serving the devotees in our consciousness, in our sadhana, then even though outside the Dham, but we are still in the Dham. Like that. So Dham should be cultivated in the heart. So Prabhupada said, a pure devotee carries Vrindavan in his heart. So wherever they go, they create Dham or they create Vrindavan. So Prabhupada also used to be like that. So when he was traveling from one place to another place, he was actually creating Vrindavan wherever he used to go. Okay. So obviously we cannot imitate Prabhupada, but at least we can try to develop that kind of consciousness that we have to take proper association and we have to serve in that association. So that becomes a Dham, finally. Okay. Because see, I will tell you one thing, that Dham is not so easy to understand. And it is extremely... it's an extremely tricky place. Why tricky? Because many things are happening in the Dham, which into our vision seems very materialistic. So we cannot actually really appreciate the Dham unless we are purified enough. So even if you go to the Dham, but still we cannot, we have not entered the Dham. And that is the reason it is best to go to the Dham with a service attitude and in the association of devotees. That is the best principle to go to Dham. Otherwise, we cannot actually understand the Dham. So Dham has to actually reveal to us, basically. Okay. Yeah, so that's the reason it's not just about chanting. It is about the other 4 things also. When you do the other 4 things, then you quickly develop love for chanting also. So the process becomes very quick. Otherwise, it can take a long time. So is that clear? See, okay, now let me ask this, that how many of you are hearing the podcast or how many of you heard the podcast that I was sharing every day for Kartik month? So there is one particular podcast where I have mentioned about what is more important, sadhana or seva. That is first one. And the second podcast just 2 days ago, is about the stages of bhakti, from right from Shraddha to Prema. How many of you have heard that both podcast?
I think maybe first one, I think I have missed very.
Huh?
The Sadhana Seva, I think that one, yeah. I haven't heard.
You have heard that. Okay. And so anyone has heard the, you know, stages of bhakti one? See, actually, when we, see, when, okay, so now the chanting is there, but the chanting can be mechanical. And even if you are hearing the holy name, it can still be a sound vibration only. But the idea is not to make it a sound vibration only. The idea is that, as Prabhupada says, that the name should reveal the form, qualities, pastimes of the Lord. So that should gradually happen with time. And if you don't hear and don't read, then that will never happen actually, quickly. It will take a long time. Because you are just hearing the holy name, just hearing. The sound is entering. So that is the reason in one of the stages that I was describing, from, you know, the difference between Ruchi stage and Asakti stage, which are obviously very advanced stage. Don't think that, you know, we are at that particular stage. We are definitely at Bhajan Priya Anartha Nivritti. But when we, you know, I just wanted to give this example because to make it clear that what is the difference, what happens basically. So in Ruchi stage, we are spontaneously attracted to the practices of devotional service. So we are, the main object of taste and worship is the devotional practices like Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam, all these things. But Asakti, which is a higher stage than Ruchi, the main object of taste or worship is Krishna. So what is the meaning of this? What is the difference?
Ruchi stage, it is for our satisfaction or for our this thing we do, and Asakti stage, maybe for the pleasure of Krishna.
Okay. Okay, so we don't say that it is for, you know, the Ruchi stage is also very advanced stage. So we don't say that Ruchi is something that is not for the pleasure of Lord. But, you know, the main difference is, anyways, okay, any other devotee who would like to guess what is the, you know, what is the meaning of that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, it's not so difficult to guess because a devotee might be doing many things, the devotees might be performing simultaneously different limbs of bhakti. But the most important principle is, when they are performing the limb of bhakti, are they able to remember Krishna? And are they able to connect that limb to the Lord? So do you get this difference? So the ultimate principle is how much they are able to remember the Lord, how much love they are developing for the Lord. Okay, so you might be attracted to hearing, you know, the glories of the Lord, but maybe it is possible that sometimes we are hearing because we like to hear. So so Krishna is not like completely present in that. So, or our mind is not completely present in remembering the Lord, because, you know, Rupa Goswami says that the essence or the goal of everything is to always remember Krishna and never forget Him. So the principle of chanting or any other process is that how much one is able to remember Krishna in that process. Okay, so you might be chanting the holy name, but Krishna is somewhere else. Or as Prabhupada puts it, that, you know, the name has to reveal further. So you cannot just stop at the holy name. You are not just hearing. No. Now I would like to know about the form. You know, like I would like to, the Lord has to manifest the form. Or I have to focus on the form of the Lord. So I should be able to focus on Krishna's form. And then comes qualities. So I have to understand Krishna's qualities. why people are worshipping Krishna, why is he so great, what are his extraordinary characteristics, what are his leelas, why is, you know, worshipped by great demigods also. So now the qualities will manifest. So all these things should come. And then, see, it is very natural. Let's say, for example, you hear about a person and then you see the person's, you know, you hear about their characteristics and then you get attracted to them. Okay. And the first thing that you hear, you know, you hear their name, and then after that you hear their qualities or you see their qualities, their behavior. And then what happens is then obviously you see their activities. Okay. So similarly, the name of the Lord should bring the form of the Lord, and it should bring, after the form of the Lord, it should bring the qualities of the Lord, and it should bring, finally, it should bring the leelas of the Lord, because that is where our goal is. You know, we want to enter in the pastimes of Krishna. We want to develop attachment so that we can enter into the pastimes of the Lord. That is the final goal. It's not that, you know, okay, we like to do certain devotional activities, but still we are in the material world. We are not developing that attachment for Krishna, or we are not developing that attachment for his holy abode, or for his leelas. You know, all these things are very important, actually. So without that, one cannot progress further. And that is the reason it is rightly said that without Sambandhyan, you can actually not chant the holy name purely, because these things will not come just by chanting the holy name. You require Guru. And the main purpose of Guru is to give Gyan. It is to give Siksha. That is the only reason a Guru exists. Otherwise, there is no reason for a Guru. You know, you have already in the Shastras, everything is written. Everything is mentioned. So there are two purposes of Guru. Is to present the Shastra to you, you know, because Shastras are very contradictory. You cannot come to a conclusion from the Shastra just by reading on your own. So the Guru's role is to actually give you the conclusion of Shastra, and at the same time to give you proper knowledge, to guide you and train you in devotional service. So after receiving this knowledge and then implementing that knowledge, then, you know, the holy name starts revealing itself. So this is the process. Okay. So I would definitely, you know, strongly recommend all the devotees, you know, they can at least hear this podcast of the different stages of bhakti and, you know, the symptoms of these stages. So at least they will know how do we advance in spiritual life. In fact, I was thinking that I should, you know, give a seminar in the next month, you know, like about the stages of bhakti. So I would like to give a presentation on that, and, you know, then it will be very clear, you know, how the stages, how do we progress in spiritual life. Okay. Yeah, so let's continue with our next verse. Okay, so yeah, Aritra, you would like to read? Are you there, Aritra? Okay, Ujjala Matari, would you like to read?
Harishan. 29th. Samoham sarva bhuteshu name dveshyostina priyaha e bhajanti tumam bhaktya maite teshu cha pyaham. I envy no one, nor am I partial to anyone. I am equal to all, but whoever renders service unto me in devotion is a friend, is in me, and I am also a friend to him. Purport. One may question here that if Krishna is equal to everyone and no one is his special friend, then why does he take a special interest in the devotees who are always engaged in his devotional service? But this is not discrimination. It is natural. Any man in this material world may be very charitably disposed, yet he has a special interest in his own children. The Lord claims that every living entity in whatever form is his son, and so he provides everyone with a generous supply of the necessities of life. He is just like a cloud which pours rain all over, regardless of whether it falls on rock or land or water. But for his devotees, he gives specific attention. Such devotees are mentioned here. They are always in Krishna consciousness, and therefore they are always transcendentally situated in Krishna. The very phrase Krishna consciousness suggests that those who are in such consciousness are living transcendental is situated in him. The Lord says here distinctly, Mayite, they are in me. Naturally, as a result, the Lord is also in them. This is reciprocal. This also explains the words, Yeyathamam prapadyante tamstateva bhajamyaham. Whoever surrenders unto me, proportionately I take care of him. This transcendental reciprocation exists because both the Lord and the devotee are conscious. When a diamond is set in a gold ring, it looks very nice. The gold is glorified and at the same time the diamond is glorified. The Lord and the living entity eternally glitter, and when a living entity becomes inclined to the service of the Supreme Lord, he looks like gold. The Lord is a diamond, and so this combination is very nice. Living entities in a pure state are called devotees. The Supreme Lord becomes the devotee of his devotees. If a reciprocal relationship is not present between the devotee and the Lord, then there is no personalist philosophy. In the impersonal philosophy, there is no reciprocation between the Supreme and the living entity, but in the personalist philosophy, there is. The example is often given that the Lord is like a desire tree, and whatever one wants from this desire tree, the Lord supplies. But there, the explanation is more complete. But here, the explanation is more complete. The Lord is here stated to be partial to the devotees. This is the manifestation of the Lord's special mercy to the devotees. The Lord's reciprocation should not be considered to be under the law of karma. It belongs to the transcendental situation in which the Lord and his devotees function. Devotional service to the Lord is not an activity of this material world. It is part of the spiritual world where eternity, bliss and knowledge predominate.
Yeah. Okay. Just wanted to ask, Rajiv Prabhu, are you there?
Yes, Prabhuji.
Yeah, Prabhuji, that what happened to that Mataji? She wanted to join.
Yeah, Angel was to coordinate, and the Angel is at her relative's place.
Sorry.
Angel is at her relative's place today.
Oh, okay.
Angel was to coordinate, and actually, even I was so busy tied up with the work, so I did not follow up. But I will definitely tomorrow I will try and just tell Angel to pass on the word and maybe ask her to,
Okay, no problem.
We will give her the recording also so that she can kind of
run it. Yeah, otherwise, what I suggested is that you could have just sent her WhatsApp contact and I would have added her in the group. So then she could have received the message also. And
correct.
Yeah.
But before that, it's just proper. We have a word with her, then and then we do this is better.
Okay. Okay, no problem.
Yeah,
that's fine.
Yeah. Surely we'll do this in this coming 2 days.
Yeah. That's okay. Okay. So now this purport also is another. You know, this verse. In fact, it's so important to understand. So here, actually, the nature of the Lord is revealed to us, or the personal aspect of the Lord is revealed to us. If the Lord would said that, you know, if he says that I am equal to everyone and I am not partial to anyone, if that much he would have said, then that would have made the Lord impersonal or incomplete. Okay. So now, because he's a person, obviously he has choices and he has a taste. No? So he has his own preferences. And so in one sense, he is equal to everyone. So see, again, the philosophy of Achintya Bhedabhava Tattva is coming into action, that there is oneness in terms of being equal to everyone, because the Lord is actually equal to everyone according how they surrender to the Lord. And at the same time, the Lord is also partial to his devotees. So this makes complete sense. You know, he is a person. And because of loving relationship, obviously, a devotee would want the shelter of the Lord and the favor of the Lord, at least, you know, to protect them from the materialistic people. So that each and every devotee would expect that. Now, you know, and it's a natural process of loving relationships that, you know, we always want the favor of the Supreme Lord. Obviously, if we follow him, you know, the demons cannot expect the favor because they don't follow the Lord. But when we are supposed to follow him, then obviously it's natural. I mean, you know, it's not necessary to expect that. It's natural. The Lord will also protect us, or he will show partiality to us. Okay, so that is a loving relationship. It's a part and parcel of loving relationship. right? So see, one more podcast, you know, I had I think just few days ago about can the Lord guide the devotees from within. So that was also like, you know, connected to this particular reference. That so in that podcast, actually I made it very clear that the Lord does guide the devotees from within, even at lower stages of devotion. It's not necessary that the Lord only guides the devotees at higher stages. Obviously, the Lord guides because of the mercy of Guru. And that, you know, because Prabhupada said that if all the devotees, they chant 16 rounds sincerely, follow the regulative principle strictly, and read his book, you know, they read his book thoroughly, then the Lord starts guiding the devotees from within. So, but this guidance from within is not compared to the level of bhava and prema. You know, there the reciprocation of the Lord is completely extremely personal. So in other words, the Lord appears to us. But obviously, you know, at lower stages, the Lord can guide us from within in terms of the super soul, because he's the Chaitya Guru. The Lord is also the Chaitya Guru, as we know. So we are not just referring to the external form of Guru, but because the Lord is also residing in the heart of all living entities, so he's also guiding them from within. Now, even for the materialistic people also, the Lord can guide them from within. But their guidance, well, I mean, the guidance given to them is not connected to spiritual life. It is connected to kind of, you know, reminding them of their previous impressions and conditioning so that they can act accordingly. Okay, now if a materialistic person has a lot of intense desire to do certain thing, then the Lord will also guide him how to do it. Or the Lord will probably make him, remind him or make him forget, or, you know, provide knowledge from within how he can do that thing. Okay, so in that sense, the reciprocation is equal to everyone. The Lord is guiding the materialistic people and the Lord is also guiding the devotees. But the result that everyone is getting is different. The devotees are, you know, they are obviously going to get better destination. In fact, the eternal destination, or not the temporary one. But the materialistic people, because they want something else, that's why they will get something other, some other destination. Right? So, the Lord has qualities, and his qualities are spiritual qualities. And because he has this partiality, quality of being partial, that is the reason we also have the quality of being partial to our family members, friends, relatives. Okay, so this is a personality attribute, and it should be there in the Lord also.
Probably, so any question? All these attributes of personality that we have are borrowed from Lord.
Exactly. Yeah. We are just.
Does that mean lust and anger also we have got from there only?
Yes, that's right. So it is said, you know, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is mentioned that all these negative things, they come from the back side of the Lord, and the positive things come from the front side of the Lord. So front meaning, you know, wherever the head is facing, that's the front front side, and back side means the back of the Lord. So,
but yeah, the origin said that any part of the Lord is capable of doing every the job of every other part of the body. So then what is back and what is front in that case? I mean, how
see, basically, we have this Bhedabhed Tattva, which means that that there is oneness in the Lord, no doubt about it. And okay, but at the same time, it is also there is also a difference. So, like, you know, it is mentioned that the entire universe is actually present in the body of the Lord. Like the eyes are representing the sun and the moon, and then the different parts of the body, they are representing different creations of the material world. So the entire universe is actually a part, you know, body of the Lord. So then we can say that, you know, well, actually, you know, we are living in the Lord as such, because, you know, it is actually like that, you know. But at the same time, it is also different. So the external energy is separated from the Lord. So it is not, you know, it is not. So we have this internal energy which is within the Lord, and we have the external energy which is separate from the Lord. So at the same time, when we say that the spiritual qualities, when all the qualities are exhibiting from the Lord, the Lord also has lust, anger, and, you know, greed, pride, envy. All these qualities the Lord also has. But the difference is, these are all pure qualities. Or you say that, you can say that it is all the end result of these qualities. It enhances the loving relationship between the Lord and the devotees. It is not to cause any harm. But in the material world, when it gets reflected in the material world, it is perverted. So when you get these qualities, it becomes impure. Okay, because the idea is, you know, the more you have lust, anger, greed, the more you would like to harm others. Okay, so it becomes perverted quality. So now, so that's the reason now it is mentioned. Now, see, because the Lord is a person and because he has a personal attribute, that's the reason there are certain things which are considered to be, you know, like you know, generally we say that the most important part of the body is the head. Right? So that's where the Brahmanas are situated. It is mentioned that, you know, the head of the Lord represents the Brahmanas, and then the arms of the Lord, they represent the Kshatriyas, and the abdomen, you know, it is represented by the Shudras. So even though the Lord is one and everything is spiritual about him, but at the same time there is also difference, and there is also a categorical distinction, so that we can understand that certain things are more exalted, you know, certain things are more, like for example, it is mentioned that, you know, the body of the Lord ultimately culminates in the smiling face of Krishna, or, you know, like the Srimad Bhagavatam is the representation of the body of the Lord. So although each and every limb and part of the body of the Lord is important, but Rasika Bhaktas, you know, for them, the most important part is the smiling face of Krishna, which is represented by 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Whereas there are other cantos also, which are obviously very important because they are all connected to the Lord. But the smiling face of the Lord is the best, like that. So similarly, there are certain things which are best about the Lord, and they are represented by the front side of the Lord. And certain things, you know, and that's the reason in the material world, we also have this same concept, because that concept is present in the spiritual context also. So we say that in the material world also, we say that the back side is not so auspicious, the front side is more auspicious, the right hand is more auspicious than the left hand. Right? So now it's the same body. So why it is said that the right hand is more auspicious? Because that's how the Lord has designed. You know, when it is mentioned in the Shastra about the right hand, you know, there is a certain reason for that. And but even though there might be a reason, but who has created that reason? It is the Supreme Lord. So he has only made the distinction of right and left hand. So right hand is more pure, and we should chant with right hand only. We should eat with right hand only. So all these qualities are present in the Lord. That is why in the material world also we see these kind of things happening. So is that clear, Prabhu? It is mainly, you know, all these things are mainly about Veda Ved, oneness and difference both. Yeah, okay. So any other devotee? Yeah, how many verses now? I think for 9 chapter 34. Always I think that today I will finish 9 chapter. But last, I think almost 4-5 classes, we have been stuck in 1 or 2 verses only. So, I mean, you know, obviously I don't mind about it. But, so, it's good, you know, that we are discussing, we are taking shelter of Bhagavad Gita and not rushing with it. But now it's, 30th verse. This is amazing verse, and this is also very important verse, which I don't want to rush now. And I would like to give some more details also. So maybe next time we can, you know, continue this verse. Api chet sudracharo bhajante mam anyabhak. Okay. So now next week I will be in Vrindavan. Next weekend. In fact, I will be leaving on Tuesday. So I'll return back on Sunday. So now whether I will be able to conduct the class on Sunday, that's, I'm not sure, but I think it will be difficult for me to do it on Sunday because of some other commitment. So maybe we won't have the class next, this coming weekend, and then we can continue on 8th December we can continue. So yeah, so any last comments, questions, any devotee has? Nitya Prabhu? Nitya Prabhu and Mataji? Yeah, you have any comment, question?
No, Prabhu, we don't have comments. No question.
Okay, all right. So, thank you all the devotees for joining. Hare Krishna, Dhanvat Pranam.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji. Hare Krishna, Prabhuji. Dhanvat Pranam.